Welcome to Cold Email with Basha and Olive. Episode 3, thanks to NYTAD for this project and Cloud Clients.
Hey.
Hello.
And welcome to another Cold Email.
Yes, with us.
I'm Basha.
And I'm Olive.
So true, bestie. Gotcha.
I saw that meme on Twitter, but I haven't seen it that much. Just
yeah, it's so sick. In this episode, speaking of besties and public besties, we call this episode Thanks to New York Times Art Director for this project, Smiley Face, and Clout Clients. The first part, of course, is the caption of so many Instagram posts.
So many.
Congrats on being in the New York Times, but we all know you're humble bragging a little.
Yeah, but no offense, I don't fucking care.
But I feel like maybe we're bitter. Come on, let's be real. It's easy to be bitter about this stuff.
Yeah. I'm like, if it was you, I'd be
like,
yes. Which
I think is how everyone feels.
There's so many reasons to be bitter, so let's talk about that.
You know Elaine on Seinfeld? And she's like at dinner with this gal who maybe like George broke up an engagement and like she's talking to the girl, or it's just her friend or something. The friend's like, you can be young and bitter. She's like, oh yeah, you can be young and bitter. Something like that.
Yeah. You can
be. You can. I'm trying to be less bitter because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I tell myself when I find myself getting too bitter. You know, I'm like, wait, this doesn't matter. I need to stop. But it comes naturally. It's like, okay, now I'm at a stopping
point. Of course. I feel like it's a natural part of being a creative person and wanting to do well and seeing other people succeed for doing similar things. It's hyper-competitive.
You're gonna be bitter. There's no way around it. But you know when to stop after a while, you know? You learn that about yourself when you're too bitter and when you are just bitter enough.
You have to have some bitterness to be able to appreciate the sugar.
Yes.
There has to be a little, like, jealousy driving you to do shit. That's part of it. Let's be real.
Yeah, it is what it is. And if you don't think that, then you're lying to yourself. You know you're bitter. We all are.
We're all working on it.
Exactly. And that's what matters, is that we're all working on it.
So this podcast idea came yet again from a text I sent to Olive in when I was freaking out, in which I will read and redact some sensitive information. I was like, hey, I worked for this museum painting some stuff for them through this company that I worked for. And I was wondering if claiming them as my client, like in your select clients in your about page, was morally questionable. Because they, you know, they didn't come to me specifically. They came to the company I worked at. But I think it's generally accepted that people do that.
Yeah, because it's like you did work for them, you know?
Yeah, I've been very cautious about doing that. And I realized that over the years, I could have added way more clients to make myself, you know, pump myself up a little, pump my bio up a little.
Yeah.
Like, I realize I've worked for a ton of notable clients, but...
Yeah, like, cloud aside, it's just like a skill and a range thing too, because even if you were at a company working for these clients that went through the company, it's like, okay, you still worked on like 10 different projects for a variety of different things. And like, you know, they know what each of those different freelance clients is. So it's like, it still shows range.
Right, range in the material and
different types of skill.
And as well as the content, like in a normal job, you send in your resume, have an interview and, they just have to believe that you're telling the truth and, like, you're gonna be cool.
Yeah, they just, like, trust you from your resume and that first impression.
Like, with a portfolio, just, like, different ballgame.
It's so much harder.
But also, I feel, like, easier to get over the hump.
If they're cool, if they're, like, you're cool, you're in, you know? It's, like, it's like, okay, cool, I'm in. Yeah.
Which I guess Clout Clients is a touch point of that. They know this name, like, oh, that's a touch point of trust.
I like got an internship for a job because somewhere that I worked, the person who had hired me also knew the people from that place.
Do you think having big names in your portfolio matters? And if so, how much?
Yes, but not that much. Because everybody knows a big name. So they see it and they're like, oh, you did work for Nike, you know, just to say a random thing. And it's like, oh, like, I know them. I know that's a big name. You got a big client, you know. It's a signifier of, to some degree, it's a signifier of your skill and that people trust you. It's like, okay, this really highly revered client hired you. Okay, that is like a symbol that you're doing great. Something right. But also it's like only to a degree because, you know, some people get these clout clients and it's like the work that they did for that is not that good. So if you're going by just the resume, then yes. But if you're going by resume and portfolio, then not that much, you know. It's only to a degree.
I also want to say about claiming credit, there's a lot of portfolios I see where I'm like, I don't think you did everything. Like, you're not, there was obviously a team working on this. Like, you might have not even designed anything. You might have been more on the strategy side, which is fine.
But yes, it's like, oh, I did this. It's like, but it's like, okay, which parts? It's being clear about what part you did.
There are a couple people in our age that you're like, how have you done this? You know, something I kind of live by that my parents taught me is that if it sounds too good to be true, probably is. So I'm like, I don't really believe you did all of this or did what you said or...
Or like there's like a fishy reason that they did get it.
There's something going on here. Like, you knew someone, you didn't do all this work, et cetera, et cetera. Not to be bitter, like that's just the reality. And then talking about doubting and being addicted to doubting, I feel like when I see people our age that are just like so like crazily successful seeming on Instagram, you know, there's, everything is not always what you seem, is all I'm trying to say.
No, yeah, Instagram puts up a very good front, a very good image, and it's not always what you, they want you to think it is.
Sometimes I feel a little sucker punched, like the feeling of a sucker punch when I see someone who I kind of like think is on quote unquote my level or like where I am in my career gets like a crazy client or a I'm like, oh,
yes.
Fuck.
Yeah. It's like that sinking feeling. It's like, oh,
which I don't want to be like that. You know, it's.
Yeah. It feels bad. It's like, I don't want to feel like that. Bringing it back to like the, you know, the bitterness. It's like, bitterness doesn't feel good, you know? It feels bad. Let's talk about Instagram culture of humble brag. I think it's something we're all guilty of.
Yeah.
Because we've all had clout clients, you know? So it's like, how do you go about that?
Who is your cloutiest client, Olive?
Right now, Destroy Boys, because I've done two videos for them. They're my clout client, but they're very cool, I gotta say. If they ever listen to this, which I kind of doubt, shouts to you guys. You're dope.
And thank you for listening so far. If you listened already, I will repeat.
Yeah, if you have, thank you.
I think I have a few clout clients. My first clout client was Babies All Right. I rode that one.
Yes.
Because that also got me other work, for sure.
It's a good one. Yeah.
And it was like, that was kind of ideal, because it was just me doing shit and then being like, yeah, cool. And then getting to do the menu was super cool. So I feel like getting to do a solo menu redesign for kind of an established place and being kind of new to the whole industry, like that happened when I was a year out of school. That was cool. So I was like, I will ride that.
Yeah.
But every time I post about Babies, I know in the back of my mind I'm doing it for a little clout.
And like, I feel similar, like one of my other clout clients is Remo Drive. I did a video for them literally like the month out of college. So I was like, okay, I'm going to ride this out. And like, because of them and like, you know, and Destroy Boys, I've gotten other jobs. Like, people reach out to me because of that. And I think that's tying in Babies. Mm-hmm. There's a skateboard going by. I don't know.
Shout
if you
out,
heard that.
Shout out. Do a kickflip. Eric Costin.
The music industry is very tight,
yeah.
And people like really trust other people that do work for them. And it's also like, it's a big portfolio thing, because now I can send those videos and you can send that menu in your portfolio in like directly in emails, and people see that first. Yeah. Yeah, it helps.
Can I name some other clout clients? No, it's okay.
Yes, please go off. Sorry, I interjected there. Please stunt on us, please.
I guess I'll say my clout client that I was nervous about, which was The Shed, which I painted some signage for them when I was working at a sign painting Shopee. And then, oh God, sign painting clout.
That's like a whole different universe of connectedness. They are wild. Another thing I've learned a lot about through osmosis from
thanks
you.
Thanks for listening and learning and living it with me a little.
Of course. Thank you for always sharing.
All right, back to Instagram humble bragging. I think you kind of have to. Like, I think it's a requisite.
Oh, yeah. I'm guilty of it.
Yeah, but is it really so guilty? Like, maybe we all just know what everyone else is doing because we're all like, we have to do this.
I think it's just like, what else are you going to say? You know, it's like, I mean, I'm like, thanks, Destroy Boys, for another video. I'm like, okay, what else am I going to say?
Yeah, when you say thanks, blank.
Or it's like, another 1-4 is the one that I am. Like, 1-4.
Of course.
Like, this proj for so-and-so is one that I'm very guilty of.
Me too.
Because it's just like, it's describing what I did and who it's for. But it's like, what else am I going to say?
It's a necessary evil, and it helps to get work, so
it is.
I guess you kind of have to accept
it. Yeah.
And be a little embarrassed about it in front of your friends.
Yeah, it's like, the alternative is overtly bragging about it, or not posting about it at all, you know?
I'll take the job, I guess, even though I'm shy.
Exactly. It's also hard being shy, because it's like, okay, I feel bad about humble bragging.
It's true.
Part 2, the interview with Maddie Price.
Maddie Price is a cartoonist, illustrator, and animator from Portland, Oregon, now based in Brooklyn, New York. Her work has been recognized by the Society of Illustrators and American Illustration. Clients include the New York Times, She Shreds, Forge Art Mag, Brooklyn Magazine, Zeit Leo, and Wilmette Week.
Without further ado, shall I ask the first question?
Yes, but I just want to say thanks, Maddie, for coming on.
Thanks for coming and chatting with us.
I'm happy to do it. Happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad. So this episode is actually called Thanks to New York Times Art Director for this project. Okay, I'm glad we were like, oh no, what if Maddie's offended?
No. You have to caption it that, you know,
it's
you're
true.
Forever. You have to.
Yeah, so we came up with the term clout clients. I don't know if we came up with it, but we started
like
referring,
that.
Thanks. So,
we
like, the
come up with that. The credit us with that.
Yeah, that was us.
Yeah. Take it.
We invented it. The first question was actually, do you agree with, like, the characterization of the term clout clients for like, a big-name client that you're, you know, proud to put in your portfolio? You, like, immediately throw it on the client's list on the website.
I mean, I feel it sucks because... like, it does kind of matter, like, if a smaller client sees that you've worked with someone, not even the New York Times, but just anything they've heard of, it's like, oh, like, that means that they're professional, which sucks. like, so it can be helpful, like, as a starting out illustrator to, like, get a New York Times thing, because it's, like, semi, not easy, but, like, they're accessible, at least, especially if, like, you have friends that have done it before and, like, have contacts. But it's also pretty silly. Like, they pay really poorly. like in terms of clout, it's like, yes, you get to have, like, the byline on your website, but, like, it's not like it's going to pay your rent or anything. And you're not going to make a living doing just New York Times editorial, you know? But all the art directors I've worked with there have been super nice and cool. Like, they're pretty, like, they all are creative people, so they're fun to work with. Like, they're good clients, I think.
Okay, a couple New York Times questions, because we're there. and a lot of it was just, like, based on, I feel like a lot of inspiration for this came from everyone's captions on Instagram. and we kind of spoke about how you have to post cringe, as Alex Citrin called it the other day. And she was like, we were just interviewing her earlier, and she said, great. I do it too. Yeah, I'm excited for that one. But yeah. She was like, I do it too, but, like, and I feel weird. It's, like, very cringy. And yeah. We're like, well,
we all
like,
do it.
Yeah, we came to the conclusion that you kind of have to.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. Like, yeah. It's that whole idea that, like, posting work begets more work or something. I don't know if it actually, like, I'd like us to reach a point where we don't need Instagram to be freelance people, but.
Yeah, it's totally, like, portfolio, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel so, like, dead-eyed when I post things like that. Like, it's just like, okay, find the art director, like, boop, 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 boop.
Yeah.
Like,
it's formulaic, for sure.
It is formulaic, yeah, at a certain point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, New York Times related questions.
Yeah.
Because you are a New York Times featured illustrator. Take it away. Up.
So, how did you get into the New York Times? Like, what was your first job for them?
It's so like Pratt, my story about this, but I took illustration. John Hahn was my illustration teacher when I was a junior. And that's, I don't know if they're still doing it, but they had the on-campus section where they would hire student illustrators. I hope that still exists because it was kind of cool. And he recommended me for it and I ended up doing it, which was like absolutely wild, like out coming from, yeah, being a junior. Yeah, that was my first New York Times job.
That's cool because I know for a lot of people, for like I think most people, it's a big box to check off.
Yeah, no, I feel very like, it's like such a level of privilege to be like, oh, I pay all this money to go to this school where this teacher knows people that work there. Right, you know, like right. At this point I can see it in that. Like, of course, like I work super hard and like was an insane student, you know, as all Pratt students are. So like, I can give myself some credit, but like a lot of people don't have that privilege. And it's like, you have to like track down their emails and know who's still working. It's like a rotating cast of art directors. It's so hard to know who does what still, you know?
Right.
Like, I feel super lucky. Yeah.
What's the process like of making an illustration for the New York Times? And I know this kind of, or I would assume, as I've not been a New York Times illustrator, but I assume it varies per section, right? Like per art director, per section, per print yeah. versus digital.
And it depends on like, because sometimes you'll get contacted for something where it's like, it's a really tight deadline and you can kind of tell that maybe someone else had to turn it down or like something didn't work out. Like there's something going on behind the scenes that you don't know about because it's like, they need sketches that day or something crazy. But normally it's like you get an email from an art director and they'll ask if you're available. I'm trying to think. I mean, I haven't done a New York Times thing. And over, well, oh no, I did one during pandemic times, but it's been a while. I think they'll normally send like, if not the article, then like what it's about or something. And you can say, then you say if you're available and then they'll tell you when sketches are due. Or maybe they say, no, I can't even remember. I need to like go look at my emails. But normally sketches, it's like at the most, you'll have a couple days, which that's like ideal. And you have to do like three ideas minimum, and then they'll look at them and they'll like, you know, sometimes they'll be like, can we combine these two or like you know, like do this but like make these changes. Usually they have really good ideas, and then normally I feel like it's like a day or two, it's another day or two for a final, if not shorter depending on the deadline. Probably the most interesting New York Times assignment that I've gotten is for the sketchbook section, where it's like a little black and white one. And I did one for them where I didn't realize this for that section, but they will include one of the illustrators in a meeting with the editors for that section. And like, you could tell them ideas and like, I got to pick which ones they were going to do for the next 2 weeks, which was like super intimidating. I was like, I'm supposed to like know what's going on in the news and like talk to New York Times people about it. Like I came like way overly prepared and was so nervous, you know, but that's like a pretty unique process. Like, I don't think many other sections work that way. And I've been contacted for that section other times where it's just like a normal assignment where I'm not going on the phone with anyone or anything.
So do you have any like print versions of the newspaper like lying around with your illustrations in it? I mean, we talk definitely about that. Like, if did anybody have like a copy of last night's paper?
Because I
like,
really need it.
Yeah,
all
my drawings in it.
And you can't find the New York Times anywhere, actually. It's like, they don't have it at Starbucks anymore. Like, it can be such a pain in the ass. I'm trying to, like, I feel like the best was being at Pratt and being able to just go get the free copy from whatever office that was. But I definitely have old copies. I have, like, a copy of everything I've ever been in print in, if not multiple copies somehow, you know? Like, just recently I was like, I could probably throw away these, like, three extra magazines that I have, you know?
No, I definitely, I have, like, two or three Pratt folios that I was in.
Yeah.
And multiple of the same one because it came.
And you're like, how? Yeah. How did you get so many? Like,
other than New York Times, do you have any other clients you would consider a clout client?
Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to think.
You don't have to throw anyone under the bus if you don't want
yeah
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. I mean, Olive, what did you say yours was? Maybe that'll.
Yeah.
Mine was Remo Drive and Destroy Boys, the two music videos that I did.
Cool. Yeah.
It's like fun clout.
Yeah.
Unless, like, I'm an illustrator. Like, yeah. But all old people have heard of. I mean, like, I would love to get, like, a, like, it's like in terms of clout clients, it's like there are still ones that I'm like, I would like to add that to my list. Like, it sucks still having that instinct to want to like collect names for your resume or for your website or whatever. I don't think besides New York Times, none of my like bigger clients are anyone like super recognizable. I just did some work for Bud Light of all companies recently. So that would be like incredibly recognizable.
But. Yeah, I just... Not sure this is in violation of an NDA.
I have no idea. Say it.
I just did work for McDonald's.
Oh my god.
I know.
Amazing. Yeah. I love that. That's like the best clout client, like a fast food chain.
Yeah, it was very silly. But fun.
Yeah.
There's definitely like weird things that come with working with large name. Yeah, working with large clients is good. It like legitimizes you in a way, but I generally feel, and this is not true with every smaller client, but there's more agency generally, and you can do some weird stuff sometimes.
Yeah,
it really
depends on the client, and I feel like I'm kind of reaching a point with freelance stuff because I haven't been like actively like pursuing freelance work as much as I was pre-pandemic. You know, for various reasons, but so it's like when I do get freelance work, I'm kind of like, this is a job, and like, I don't know. I've like had a lot of small clients be weirdly picky and like not like ideas, and I'm still kind of getting paid poorly. Like at this point, I'm kind of like, I almost would rather be getting paid like what I think I deserve hourly and be doing kind of boring work sometimes, like because it's like, okay, that means I don't have to like get a day job or whatever for a couple more months. Like with this Bud Light thing, it was like, of course it was very like, I knew from the get-go that I wasn't going to be making like super edgy work for them or anything. Like it's like, I'm going to make what they're asking for, and they paid me super well hourly, which, you know, like that normally is not the case. Like normally I'm like working on something, I don't know. I have so many thoughts about this because it's like you, and I don't want to give some like client all my good ideas and creative energy if they're not paying me well and don't seem to really want it. You know, it's like you have to find a balance between those two things.
So much like abuse of worker and workplace. And this year I've really been reflecting on it, and it's also made me like way less eager to jump at a job. Like,
yeah.
To jump in, even though freelance has been, like, this month, I've had no freelance. I will totally admit that. I bought a chain stitch machine.
Yeah, that's totally, so, I have full yeah. months and months where I don't get freelance, like.
It feels so bad, though. I feel so fake. I'm like, yeah. I'm not a freelance.
And I totally know the feeling.
Yeah.
You will get better at it.
At feeling, like, being, like, nice, I have no like, work.
yeah, nice, I have no work. Like, I can chill for a second.
Yeah.
Work will come. Mm.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. I think it's important to have time for personal stuff. Like,
yes.
Super important. Yeah.
Okay. This is Basha. I'm actually coming in after the fact. So that's why I sound a little different. Because we do record over the internet, we can get some weird Zoom distortion sometimes. So just for clarity's sake, I'll say that at this point where I got cut off, I was trying to say, basically, clout clients are nice to have, but not necessary. Okay, back to the interview now.
I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
But they're not everything.
It'd be nice if they, like, I don't think they're necessary. Like, and I think obsessing over, like, getting certain clients can be unhealthy because it's like your work is going to get hired for whatever the person, like, whatever, like, it's all about opportunity and, like, what articles need what. And you can't take it too personally.
Yeah, I feel like there is especially going to school in the area, right? Like, there's a lot of competition, obvious. Like, I think that's a known thing for art school, especially Pratt. And then since there's such a quick transition into the industry, you go from, like, being a fan to quickly, like, being someone who actually does work, kind
of. Yeah,
you know,
you're
like,
kind of in limbo a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
fan to peer.
You're like, I'm still a baby, though.
Yeah.
Oh
God, I think we went to the AI party in, like, 2019, I want to say, and we're talking to Ronnie Lawler, and she's like, you're our competition now. She's like, you're a peer. Like, in kind of, like, a joking way.
Yeah,
it's like, a welcome to the world. Like, you're a professional now, you know? It's like, you're not a student anymore.
I think for that reason, because you go from, like, outside in, and you're so close to it being in Brooklyn, like, working with art director professors, that people, like, stan things. You know how stans are? People are just, like, obsessed with being in one publication or, like, similar
it's
thing.
Not good. Mm. And I hate that, like, that is the expectation is that you're, like, a student and being, like, working and being a freelancer already. Like, it's, like, you should fully have time even after you graduate to, like, fuck around. And, like, that's what school is for. Like, I hated the feeling of, like, pressure to, and maybe it's because, like, I, like, had the opportunity to, like, work with this big client when I was, like, a junior before I even really, like, knew how to do anything. But, like, I kind of felt free from that because I was, like, I don't, like, this shouldn't matter that much. Like, all of our work is going to change so much even after we graduate. And, like, what we want to do is going to be different. Like, most of my classmates, like, we all thought we wanted to, like, take the same track of illustration. And it's, like, so few people actually end up doing that. It's not for everybody. And it's not everyone can make a living doing that either.
I think at Pratt, they often make it out to be, like, a bad thing. Some professors are like, only two of you are going to be New York Times illustrators. And it's like
well, so
yeah.
What?
It's like, so what? There's so many jobs out there that aren't
exactly.
The New York Times.
Yeah.
And
that, we shouldn't all try to make work for the New York Times or for any publication.
Yeah,
like,
it should
be all
about,
the same,
like,
shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know that tweet that's like, I do not dream of labor?
Yeah,
I think it's a little like that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I was just listening to your last episode when I was biking earlier, and I was like thinking about, or I was just so relating so hard to, like, the feeling of, like, that you should always be working because of Pratt. Like, I really had to, like, on purpose pull myself away from that. Like, I just think it's so unhealthy, and, like, I think as good of an education as Pratt is, like, it sucks putting so much pressure on, like, literal, like, teenagers and, like, 20-year-olds to, like, know what they want to do, you know, like, I don't know. There's just more to life than work.
Yeah.
100%. I feel
like... and getting New York Times assignments or whatever.
Yeah.
Tie it back.
That was a perfect tie-in.
Yeah.
I feel like I felt that a lot, especially with the pandemic.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you feel like graduating, I guess, like, having 2 years in the world and then, like, boom, the world stops? Like, do you feel like that has affected your career path?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I guess, how could it not?
I have, like, a weird kind of, like, I had a weird life experience where, like, right after graduating, when I was like, I'm gonna like hit the ground running and like try to work, keep working super hard, even though I'm so burnt out, you know, like that was like my plan. I was like, if I don't do that, then I'll die and I'll never work as an illustrator, you know, so unhealthy. I tore my ACL and had to go home, and I ended up getting like 1,000 knee surgeries and like living in my parents' basement for almost like a full year. And I couldn't work. Like, I was like on drugs for a lot of that time, or like could barely do anything. And I had to like sort through the guilt of like literally only being able to lay down for months, and like feeling so bad that I wasn't actively making anything when it was like my body needed to heal. Like, I think my body literally was like, you need to sit down for a long time. And so I feel like when the pandemic hit, it was like, obviously this is a completely different situation, but like, especially the first few weeks of quarantine, I was like, I feel like I've already experienced this kind of, like, I've already been through this, like, having to sort through, like, what is just, like, capitalism telling me that I'm worthless if I'm not constantly producing, and what is, like, the world and my body telling me that I need to take a break, and then that will be good for me. And, like, that it's okay to take, it's okay to not be making anything. Like, you do not have to, like, draw every day, or, like, be, I don't know. I think it's, there's too much pressure.
I feel that. I
yeah,
think we both
absolutely
feel like, I think everyone
yeah
makes stuff.
Yeah. Definitely,
that.
Definitely. It's, yeah, yeah. I feel yeah very passionately about that. And I'm sure everyone, yeah, like everyone has learned that lesson in the pandemic. Like that's like become, I feel like everyone is like figuring that out. That it's like, I can't, like my job can't be my life anymore. Like I need to do other stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Alex was just telling us that with her baby, she took 6 months off.
Yeah,
basically, and was like
a beautiful baby, so
we
cute
met Ray.
Oh my god.
she's really great.
So cute.
Oh, but she was talking about how she felt like she would never work again, and she like felt that all the time, especially
yeah
being alone in the pandemic raising a baby. And
I
that she had
imagine
to yeah she had to like keep telling herself it was okay to literally take a break to be raising her mm child.
Yeah, like it's such poison that we have to, you have to sort through those feelings when it's like, that is like the most natural thing to take breaks. Like it makes your work better. Like there's just so many, and like besides work, like it just makes your life better. You're a happier person if you take breaks.
Yeah. I remember being in a group. I was like, hey guys, let's take a break. And someone on my team at school was like, oh, you really, wow, you really like to take breaks. It's like,
fuck yeah.
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 Like, breaks rule.
Yeah, because then, I mean, just in terms of, like, I'm not miserable, like, let's put that aside. If your head is just down for, like, 6 hours, you're, once you pick it up and look at the work again after a second, you're going to see totally different things and maybe have wasted 5 hours.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I'm glad we're all in agreement. Breaks rule.
Yeah.
And it's not being lazy. That's capitalist.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important.
But yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah,
it has.
Thanks for talking with us.
Bye. Thanks
Bye
for talking to us.
Yeah, thanks
Bye
for talking to
of
us.
Of course.
That was such a good interview, in my humble opinion. You should definitely check out Maddie's work, which you can find at maddieprice.com, and follow her on Instagram at coolfriendlyman.
Cold Email is a very professional podcast about being early career creatives and all the trials, tribulations, and good times that come with it. Recorded, written, and performed by Basha Kurlander and Olive Lagaze. Edited by Basha Kurlander. Follow us on Instagram at cold.email and check out our website, cold-email.tumblr.com. Email us at coldemail1000@gmail.com with any questions you want us to answer on the show, suggestions for future themes, or to inquire about guest starring in an episode. Music by Basha Kurlander aka Marbly. As always, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
BOFA. Worst acronym.
BOFA.
Sorry. Edit that out.